Houston, it's our time now. With the 34th pick in the 2025 NFL Draft, the Houston Texans select Jaden Higgins, wide receiver, Iowa State.
All right, there you go. Nice job, Owen Daniels. Did a good job, just got up there. Shouted out Wisconsin for 2 seconds. Shouted out Houston. Announced the pick. No stories, no anecdotes, no preambles. Good job, OD, on all the picks that you did. Way to go. Jaden Higgins, 34th pick in the draft of the Houston Texans. And from there, they were off and running, adding players to the team. No picks on night one. Traded out of the first round to the 34th overall pick. And they end up picking 9 players over the weekend. Jaden Higgins, the headliner in the class. They would go on in the second round to add Ariante Ursary, offensive lineman out of Minnesota. They draft 2 more in the second round, 2 more players, 2 Jalens. Jalen Knoll, wide receiver, Iowa State. Jalen Smith, cornerback, USC. And then they drafted 5 more players on day 3. 9 in all. Here was D'Amico Ryans with his feelings on this year's draft class.
Yeah, we feel really good about this draft class. Put a lot of work in, so with our scouts, our coaches, guys put a lot of work in and did a great job evaluating talented guys, not only about the talent, but also the people. We brought in a ton of great people, also great players, and that's the formula that we like, and it's worked well for us, and we think these guys come in and contribute and help our team get better.
Yeah, and the people part of it, the mindset, the type of people they are, it feels like that got brought up first with every single player that D'Amico got asked about on Saturday, which I'm fine with. Here was D'Amico Ryans on the mindset that they were looking for in players.
The mindset is definitely everything, right? If you have the mindset to work, the mindset that you really enjoy and love playing football, that fits our building, that works for us, that works with the guys that we already have here. We have a ton of guys in our locker room already who love football, and I just believe that when you love the game of football, right, we're gonna get your best. Right, when you go through those difficult days, when it's going to be hard moments in training camp, hard moments throughout the season, I feel like your love for football will give you that edge to keep pushing through when the difficult moments come.
All right, so like 98% humidity, stuff like that. All right, positives and negatives from the class, Seth. I think I'll start positives. I thought the 2 big positives were that they got some weapons for C.J. Stroud. 3 of the first 5 picks were skill position guys, including 2 wide receivers that I think can get into the rotation early, and then a 3rd down running back, which I think is a need for this team. You can't go into the season with Dari Ogunbowale as your 3rd down back. You need more juice out of that position. So they took care of that, and while they were a little light on the offensive line, we'll certainly get to that and maybe the negatives or perceived negatives about this class, Ursary does seem to fit the new mentality that they're looking for or seemingly looking for. They seem to deny they're looking for it, but you know, I think you can read the tea leaves and go, they're looking for a different vibe in that offensive line room. They need one. That Ursary seems to fit that mentality. We'll see how good a player he is, but he seems to fit the mentality they're looking for in that O-line room.
Yeah, the Ursary is Ron Hughley's not happy with our last segment. So the Ursary's
well, don't let him spoil this segment.
Ursary, I think that there is it's interesting. He's huge. He's gigantic. He uses his weight well. He's way more athletic than you'd expect by his size and kind of the way he moves. It doesn't look fluid, but he flat out gets places. He gets from A to B very quickly. He uses his hips well. I think there's still room for him to grow in terms of actually the physicality side of things in the run game. And part of that is, you know, he plays in a scheme that's an outside zone-based scheme. So if he were in a different scheme where they were just running duo and power and all this stuff all the time, he'd be maybe a little bit more polished in that. I really like the upside of him. I really think Ursary has the potential to, with that size especially, give you versatility in the run game. But also, you know, when you go back and you watch him versus Abdul Carter at Penn State, the speed rush element to the outside wasn't the issue. He handled Abdul Carter pretty well. It was some of the stunts to the inside where Ursary got caught just a little stepping up underneath himself at times and couldn't quite get to him quickly enough when Abdul Carter slanted to the inside. So that's something he's going to have to work on. And that is, you know, that's coachable. That's experience, all of that. I don't think that he lacks the ability to do it athletically. But as a the A number one thing you worry about is pass protection. He checks off a lot of boxes with pass protection.
Yep. As far as the two receivers in the third down back go, the two receivers, Jaden Higgins, Jalen Knoll, and then the third down back they got in the fourth round. They traded back into the fourth round on Saturday to get Woody Marks out of USC. Do you think that all three of these guys are in the rotation come week one? Are Knoll and Higgins two of your top, say, five receivers, and is Woody Marks a guy that's getting three or four touches a game?
It's a great question. I think that there's a – if we're to take the individuals out of it and just talk about the type of position, it's a lot more nuanced and harder to learn how to play slot well as a rookie. And a lot of the stuff that you do underneath – it's just you're reading coverages a lot. You got to kind of figure out ways where the soft spots and the zones are more so than some of the things they might ask a bigger guy like Higgins to do. So I would, if I had to handicap it, I would say Higgins, very likely that he's in the rotation week one. The week one, there still might be a little bit with Knoll where, okay, we want somebody that's got a little bit more command of the playbook and polish, because obviously Christian Kirk's going to be there too already. So, there's a very good chance both of them will be. I think Higgins, it's just there's maybe a more clear path for him immediately because he's got that thing you can't coach, and it doesn't matter as much about scheme as he's got a wing, he's got a catch radius,
he's a big guy,
size, all that.
Yeah, he's a big guy. Now Knoll, I think will be, I think he'll be active in week one because I think there's the possibility of him returning kicks for this team and punts.
Yeah, okay, so I guess active or in the rotation? I think they're both active.
Yeah,
but yeah, in the rotation at receiver, I think Jaden Higgins more likely.
What about Marks? What do you think about him, fourth round running back getting in there? It sounds like he's more of a third down back than a bell cow kind of guy.
Right. I think special teams is going to be a factor for anybody we talk about in the skill positions with the rookies. But just strictly from the running back side of things, I think a lot of that depends on Damian Pierce and how they feel about Damian. I think it was very clear last year during training camp and during the season, and anytime we've heard Nick Caserio talk about Damian Pierce, I think they still believe in Damian Pierce. He didn't really do anything in training camp last year, and I'm including practice. I didn't think he did anything in practice or in the games that looked like, oh, yeah, you got to keep that guy on the squad. But they kept him, and they fired the offensive coordinator eventually.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that if you go back to when Damian was really effective consistently, it was with a different offensive coordinator, ran a different style of system. Like, he was way better under Pep Hamilton than he was under Bobby Slowick. So that a lot of that might come down to just how they feel about Damian Pierce by week one. And Agumba Wale still brings a lot to the table on special teams.
Is a
reliable receiving back, even though he's not your dream of what you want one to be. That there's, I'd say 50-50 on Woody Marks.
There's certain guys on this team, and Dare is one of them, that I feel are on the team primarily for special teams. And then if you need to use them, it's a break glass in case of emergency situation, like on offense or defense. You know, that's what that feels like.
Dari is the guy who I perennially in my mind feel like my knee jerk is like, yeah, boy, he's up and coming, and he's just got to turn the corner. He's like he's 31 years old.
He was in camp at the Greenbrier with the Texans back in the day.
I know. But he's perennially the guy that's like, oh, maybe this is the year. Maybe they just kind of find the right spot for Agumba Wale.
As far as negatives go about the draft class, the biggest question that we're hearing is, did they do enough on the offensive line? Should they have done more on day one to go up and get one of those offensive linemen that went before them? Did they eventually do enough in this 9-man class? Ursary wound up being the only offensive lineman that they take. Now, Nick Caserio will be quick to point out that there's other ways to get guys in the building. You know, you can make trades. Guys are going to get cut. If I had to guess, this is the group that they're going to be. You know, the group of 8 or 9 guys that are active on week one are going to come from the guys that are now in the building with the Texans. You know, barring a couple undrafted guys that they signed this week, you know, I don't think there's a big trade coming. I think they're going to roll with this group, and they're going to hope that this is a better coached group than the group last year.
Yeah, I think that there's going to be genuine competition. I believe that their actions last year during training camp were that there was no competition on the offensive line. And they barely practiced during training camp. Your offensive tackles were hit or miss as to whether they were out there at practice during the day. Yeah. Kenyon Green was locked in at left guard. Juice Scruggs was going to be the center. And Shaq Mason, old reliable, he's going to be your right guard. You look up, and three of those guys are gone off the team. Laramie had been in a position where he deserved to not have to compete.
Obviously. Yeah,
like,
yeah,
you
yeah.
know, I would have liked him to practice more.
Yes.
But there has to be absolute actual competition at all five positions.
Is there anybody in ink right now on this offensive line?
I think it's as good as ink that Tytus Howard will be starting either at right tackle or at guard.
Don't know where. I'm with you on that.
I've seen a lot of people say, hey, Laken Tomlinson can play right guard. I would agree, except that he's also, I mean, he's up there in years now, and he's only ever played left guard in the NFL.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's as simple a thing, but possibly.
I think other negatives or maybe areas of criticism. I think some of the trades up to me, I'd just like to know more about. I mean, obviously the Texans have better intel than we do sitting and watching the draft. Trading up to get Jalen Smith, a guy who most of the experts gave a day three grade to. And later in day three, a lot of them, they not only draft him in the third round, but they trade up to do so. I'm just curious about that. Trading up to get Graham Mertz, a quarterback who he wasn't a great college quarterback by any means, and he's coming off an ACL tear. I would question, if you had told me they were drafting Graham Mertz at all, I would have been surprised before the draft, let alone, again, they gave up a seventh round pick to do it. I'm not running up to NRG Stadium today, banging on the door saying, I need an explanation.
Yeah.
It does feel like that Nick Caserio trades up. I mean, trades a ton, period. He traded seven times in this draft. There are times that he goes after players where I'm curious that, okay, are we burning a pick here when you don't have to?
Well, I think and that's where the whole burning the pick side comes into looking at the long term. If you're trying to take the best player available, QBs are in a different category. And I think that good organizations, and this is what the Patriots did the entire time Tom Brady was with the Patriots, they drafted a quarterback on average about every other year, that you're just always taking a swing and seeing how a guy develops. And over time, if you get one of those guys, it translates into a second round pick with Jimmy Garoppolo, or it can turn into Tom Brady himself. I don't like bringing up Tom Brady as the example, because that's what everybody does.
So Mel Kiper did all weekend talking about Shadur.
But the thinking behind Tom Brady wasn't, hey, I'm going to draft this guy and he's going to supplant Drew Bledsoe and become one of the greatest players of all time. The thinking is that, no, even though we have Drew Bledsoe as our quarterback, we're still going to draft quarterbacks and we're going to see how they develop. So I'm cool with that. I think that's what a lot of good organizations, not all of them, but a lot of them have that theory that you should always be drafting quarterbacks and always have something in the hopper, because at the very least, it becomes a more affordable replacement for Davis Mills. And if it develops real quickly and you felt comfortable with him, then you could actually, some way down the line, if the team's desperate for a quarterback in the middle of the season, you can get a higher draft pick for Davis Mills than you might expect.
Yeah. Success for the Mertz pick is if he's your backup quarterback in 2026. That's an extreme success right there. I don't have a problem with them taking a quarterback. I'm just not a huge Graham Mertz fan is all. That's all.
I don't like the way that his name flows, as it sounds like the word grammar.
Grammerts. Yeah.
Or it sounds like there's no M at the beginning of his second name. You said Grammerts at the beginning of the segment, and I was like, Sean, his name is Mertz. And then I realized, like, oh, no, that's how
it sounds, man. Grammerts. My only other criticism of this draft class is that they drafted way too many Jalen spelled a different way characters. It felt intentional towards you, Seth. By the time they were still drafting Jalen's in the sixth round, and there were four of them now, Jaden and three Jalen's, I'm like, this is personal. You've done an incredible job today, by the way.
I'm going to give myself four dings.
Yes, one for each Jaden Jalen.
For each of the Jans.
Yeah, each of the Jans.
The Jans name Jay.
Good way
to put it. The Jans that I've had a cheat sheet in front of me the entire time. I've got them highlighted. I've got the draft order in front of me, and I've got Jaden, Jalen, and Jalen. All highlighted.
Yep. Yeah. What is, as long as we got a couple minutes here, I saw the tweet. What exactly, the audience is wondering, what exactly is Ron saying to us on Twitter?
Well, I had basically taken every argument I've heard about why Shadur Sanders is getting screwed over and shot each of them down mercilessly.
Yeah.
And I, like you guys know, I'm not really on social media all that much, so I don't know what Ron's been saying. But Ron basically said, what'd he say? According to Sean and Seth, I'm the meek, dumb one, SMDH. And then you responded, and he said, I'm just acknowledging knowing I'm done, dumb. Now that I know, I understand it's time to smarten up and change my ways.
Oh,
after listening to you guys, now I know this all makes sense and he got exactly what he deserves.
Oh, okay. I can't wait.
I responded and I just said, I'm just dumbfounded that people are choosing to ignore the plainly obvious and very public concerns that people have been talking about for months rather than admit that those concerns appear to have been valid.
Yeah. 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 Okay.
People are acting like this is an ambush or a surprise or something. People have said, oh, all these reports come out after the slide. No, these reports have just been aggregated by various people and condensed and put out to you. These reports have been here for months about the way Shadur has been conducting himself in actively tanking the NFL draft.
Yep.
He's been actively tanking the draft, and it worked.
Yep.
If anything, if you're trying to defend the honor of Shadur Sanders right now, you're basically also accusing him of having an ineffective draft strategy. Yeah. His strategy was to tank the draft, and it worked way more effectively than he thought it
did
would.
Did it ever. Remember, we'll have the audio from Lewis Riddick in the next segment. Remember, he's like, I hope Shadur lands outside the top three. Oh, he did. He landed outside the top 143. 144.
Has Ron been waging a war against the conspiracy?
He was tweeting quite a bit this weekend.
Shadur.
He was tweeting a lot about it this weekend. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He felt bad for Shadur.
You read one of them, and it was Ron had said something about like it's better to commit a crime than to be bad in meetings. And my response was yes.
Been that 100%. Way for, well, it's been that way forever. I replied to Ron's tweet just now, knowing what he had tweeted over the weekend, and I said, you as a Chiefs fan should know better than anybody that NFL teams will overlook criminal activity to draft them if they can be good on the football field. And I said, if Shadur had assaulted somebody, the Chiefs might have traded up to go get Shadur Sanders.
Right. You know what happens, though, is most of the guys that commit crimes or what have you, they know and understand how to be respectful to a coach.
Yeah.
Like, because at some point they got to talk to the coach, and the coach is like, hey, what happened? What's up with these stolen laptops? And the player says, I made a huge mistake. I'm just here to play football, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. As opposed to just acting like you're better than everybody else. Coaches hate that.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. If you're asking, is a coach more willing to excuse a crime that you committed in the past than he is you being disrespectful to his face or to his friends' faces on other organizations or what have you? Yes. The answer is yes.
That's a simple answer. That's right.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like I've been paying attention to the NFL a long time.
Yeah.
I know a lot of super solid dudes who also have screwed up and committed a crime at some point.
Yeah.
But as football players, they're super solid dudes. They don't throw their offensive linemen under the bus. They don't disrespect, like, to their faces, coaches and GMs. Yeah, there's a difference.
I'm sorry I have to
burst the naivete of apparently a large segment of NFL fans that have committed crimes in the past that teams are willing to overlook.
Yeah.
More so than people who are just D-bags.
Yeah. 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 Kansas City Chiefs, chief among those teams that do that. Mm-hmm. They've done that a lot. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. You can tell it's going to be a saucy day here on the station. I'm very excited to listen to Sports Radio 610 throughout the rest of the day. Speaking of Shadur, I think there's two quotes. If we're going to nail it down to the mentality that may have done him in when it comes to his draft stock, we've got that for you. And the two biggest Shadur cheerleaders having to eat their words over the weekend, not Ron Hughley, but on TV. We've got that for you coming up as well. Stay there.